Okay, Chevra, so we are learning sukkah, and on Daf Gimel Amid Beis, we have a discussion that, let's say I have a sukkah which is over 20 amos, ha'isagavomi esrim amma, ubala ma'ato bekarma kisasos, lo hevi miyot. Right? Basically, the sukkah is above 20 amos. What I have to do is I have to make it under 20 amos. Now, there are two ways to take something from over 20 and make it under 20. You could lower the schach, you could raise the floor. Right? So what they're trying to do is to raise the floor. So they take their pillows and mattresses or whatever, the kar and the keset. I think actually a keset is technically a mattress in halacha, rather than we usually think it's like a different type of pillow. I think it's technically a mattress. So you want to put your mattress and your pillows on the floor. So that does not count as a miyot. Afagav de batlinhu, even though you say it is batel, there is another word that is thrown into the Gemara, the word lekolhu, which we'll have to figure out whether that word should be there or it should not be there. Right? It's a bracketed word. And the reason why it's not considered lowering the height of the sukkah when I put my pillows and mattresses is because the batladaita itzo kol adam. Because normal people don't leave their mattress there in a way that it would sufficiently lower the height of the sukkah. So if you do that, but ledaita itzo kol adam, even though you have all the right halachic intentions, it doesn't matter, we ignore your intentions. Tevenu bitloi hevi miyot, v'koshe kein oferu bitloi. If I have straw, which I'm a vato, or I have dirt, which I'm mevato, that counts as miyot. That lowers the height of the sukkah. I put straw there, and I'm mevato the straw. Straw is different than dirt, in that straw tends to be used more for animals, no? The animal, I think, we usually distinguish between straw and hay in English, no? I think hay is intended to be animal food, and straw is just like to relax, but to lie down on. My understanding is that over here, when they use the word teven, they're referring to what we would call hay, not what we would call straw. No? Okay. Teven ubitlai is miyot, v'koshekein afar ubitlai is also miyot. Dirt is useless. Certainly, if I am mevatel the dirt, that's a miyot. Teven ve'ein asid lefnoso ofer stam is a machloikas. But if I have teven and I'm not mevatel it, I'm just not going to move it, or I have ofer and it's stam, we'll have to define these terms in a few minutes, so in that case, it is a machloikas between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon, and that machloikas is le'inyan tuma, which we will, I guess we'll read it now, and then we'll try to unpackage this whole thing. Ditznan, that we learned in the Mishnah in Ahalos. Tysus over here quotes that this isn't exactly the same language as the Mishnah in Ahalos. But Tosus says that the Gemara very often, Derech Hashas is lekatzer Mishnah Yishol Seder Taharos. That's Tysus's Lashon. That the Gemara will quote Mishnayos and Taharis, but it will use certain editorial liberties with Mishnayos and Taharis.
Just Taharis, no other.
But, so just Taharis, basically, I think. I mean, that's the way Tosus quotes it. There is one Gemara in Bava Metzia where Rav Amram says, Ba'arba lo matzina, b'shita matzina. In other words, I don't even know the four siddurim of Shas that I'm supposed to know. How do you expect me to know all six? Now, what are the four stem that they're supposed to know? So three of them are easy. Now, Moe, Noshim, Nezikin is easy. What's the fourth? So the answer is probably Zeraim. Zeraim was Halacha L'maisa. No? A Kodjim and Taharis, no one knows.
Yes.
That's like the general idea.
I don't know.
Huh?
Like
Nagayim. Nagayim is, yeah, I mean, whatever. There's people think that like Hilim and Ahalos, so it's usually the Masechtas that people take last for Mishnayos. Honestly, Nega'im and Kil'ayim are much worse than Kalim and Ahalos.
We really enjoy them.
Whatever. I remember the... I remember the long Friday nights before my bar mitzvah, and I'm like, why am I doing this? What are we doing? What's going on here? And like, whatever. So the thing is that if you have teven, which you won't move, it's not that you're mevatel, you just won't move it, or you have stam afar, that's a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon, and we learned a Mishnah, or a pseudo-Mishnah in Ahalos, that bayashemil uhu teven otzreros ubitlo mivutal. If you have a house that's full of teven, or tzreros, tzreros Rashi says is the equivalent of afar. Tzreros are tiny rocks. Effectively, dirt is also tiny rocks, no? If you're mevatel, for sure it's mevutal. Bitlo in, lo bitlo lo. Vitani Allah, and we learned about that. The Rabbi Yossi says teven, which you won't move, is like afar stam, and it's batal afar. But also lufnoso is like stam teven below batal. Comma, end of the Gemara. We'll talk about it now. Okay, so effectively, in terms of hilchos sukkah, if I have a sukkah over 20 and I want to lower the height, zok the Gemara, I cannot do it with mattresses and pillows, because butla daito etzel kol adam. Why do people not leave their mattress and pillow there for a long time?
Because they get
gross. They get yucky. That's what Rashi writes. Right? Rashi at the bottom of the page writes, Mipnei hefseid memono. Right? Rashi writes, actually, let's read this whole Rashi, She'in sofo lahaniach sham kol zayin, Mipnei hefseid memono. In other words, according to Rashi, the issue at hand is whether you will leave the mattress there for the entire Yom Tov of Sukkos. All I care about is the 7 days of Sukkos. I don't care about more time than that. And I'm not going to leave my mattress there because I don't, it'll get yucky and gross. I think that was the official term that was given. It's not so significant, but the Ran on Aleph Amidbeis Bedape Harif, the Ran has a slightly different take. The Ran says that your pillow and blanket, by the time you turn there, it's going to be over, but your pillow and blanket is something you're mishtamish botadir. It's not going to get yucky and gross. You have to remember, their homes were dirt floors, so their mattresses were probably yucky by our standards anyway. But the idea is that you need your mattress, so you're not going to leave it in the sukkah the whole time. That's where the Rambam says it.
You're supposed to live in your sukkah.
You're supposed to live in your sukkah, but you have your regular sukkah mattress, and this is like the extra mattress that you're putting in the sukkah to just lower the height. That's what it is.
So then clearly you have an extra mattress, so you don't need to use it.
Well, you're going to have guests, you're going to have kids. I don't know, there's someone who's going to take the mattress out. Okay, that's the din. But it's clear in Rashi that bittul means bittul for 7 days of yontiv. And Rashi writes in the sugya of in the Rashi on the top of Dalet Amraf, Tevenu bitlo, Rashi writes befiv. In other words, according to Rashi, what bittul has to be is that you articulate that this will be there for 7 days. That's Rashi Shita. If that's the case, so in the sugya, when we speak about the difference between bitlo and ein osid lefanoso, for Rashi that's very simple. Bitlo means I make a statement, I convene the bezin, Shimon HaRabbayisai, I'm leaving this mattress here. I articulate it. Ein osid lefanoso is just that I think. I don't want to move it. I think I'm going to leave it there, but I don't say explicitly I'm going to leave it there. Right? That's Rashi's shita. That is Judaism according to Rashi. The issue at hand is 7 days, and the issue at hand is bittul requires befeh, and therefore in the Gemara when they speak about teven ve'ein osin lefanoso, that means that the straw which you intend to leave there but you don't say it, afar stam, right? Afar stam is plain dirt. You don't think that you're going to leave it there. You didn't make a conscious decision even, but dirt mistoma, once it's there, you're going to leave it there. Tevin, you have to make a conscious decision that I plan on leaving there, even though I don't articulate it. Afar stam means you have plain dirt. The assumption is that plain dirt will be left there, even if you do not mentally designate it as such. Nachon? So this is the Gemara according to Rashi. Beautiful Gemara. Many Rishonim agree with Rashi, including the Rush. Maybe we'll talk about the Rush's Raya. But Rashi has an opponent in the Sugya. A few opponents. The Rabbeinu Chananel on the side of the Gemara. Rabbeinu Chananel talks about here. Tevin ubitlo hevi miyot. It's, I know, in my Gemara, it's like 10 lines or so into the Rabbeinu Chananel. Tevin ubitlo is miyot. V'koshkein afer ubitlo kigon. That means, what does bitl mean? Shehiskim shelo litlo misham leolam. Right? So there are two nekudos hamachlokes, two points of dispute between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel. According to the Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ritva basically says the same thing as the Rabbeinu Chananel. The word bitl does not have to involve articulating.
So then what is the ain asu
with no? Wait. Okay, good. Right? But first, let's just see what the Rabbeinu Chananel says. Rabbeinu Chananel says that bitul means you make a mental decision, you don't articulate it. But the duration is not for Zayin Yamim. The Rabbeinu Chananel uses the word la'olam. La'olam means forever. Gevaldik. Okay? Now, according to Rabbeinu Chananel on the Ritva, what's the difference between Ein Osid Lufanoso versus Bittel? So the answer might have to do with the duration of time. Meaning, if I'm mevatel it in the sense of I decide never to move it, that for sure works. But if it's something that I decide that I'm not going to move it for 7 days, right? Tevin ve'ein osir lefanoso means I decide I'm not going to move it for 7 days. It's not permanent. It's just for 7 days. Or afar stam, or dirt that, again, it's the same according to Rashi. Afar stam is just like you have dirt there and you have like no conscious decision at all about dirt. So that's going to be the machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon Adkan. So again, so according to Rashi, the issue at hand is really whether you verbalize. But according to the Rabbeinu Chananel / Ritva, the issue at hand is how long you leave it there. La'olam versus a briefer period of time. Now, did any of you have a chance to read the Rush? So let's look at the Rush. Simon Bays, right? So the Russian Simon Bays basically quotes our Gemara. Then he writes.
Oh, I looked at Gimel.
What? You did the wrong one?
I did.
You did Simon Gimel instead? It could be that was my mistake. And it's very possible that was my mistake. Sometimes I don't look stuff up before I... it should be Simon Bays. But let's read it together. Simon Bays is relatively short. Right? We'll read the whole thing now, in honor of Tanya. If the sukkah is over 20, you want to make it lower. So miyot ha-bekar muksosis is not a good miyot. Af al-gav de-batzulenu, but la-dai, to call Adam. Tevin o-bitlo is miyot. Koshim ofar bitlo. Tevin snam asar va-asar. Ofar va-asar ifnoso. Kuliyama is not bitlo. Tevin va-in asar ifnoso. Ofar stam. It's not going to be in the rabbona. According to rabbona, it's not bitlo. According to rabbona, it is bitlo. Ve-halokha. Rabbanon, because machlekes yochid v'rabim, we pass like the rabbanon, rabbim. Comma, period, beautiful. Kol bitul d'shmaitzim pirush Rashi l'zayin yomim. Right, Rashi says throughout the sugya, bitul is 7 days. Rabbeinu Chananel of Rabbeinu Aviha Ezri, Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rav Yah pirushu ad olam. They say that bitul's got to be permanent. The Nirik Pirish Rashi, the Bittul Dahacha, is caused by Mitzvah Sukkah. Dumya Demiya Dakota of a Charit Shabin Beis Chatziris de Perik Chalon. Delo Bay Bittul Ella the Osa Shabbos to Ka'amar Hasim the Dover Sheino Nitol Bishabbos Mimait, Avadavar Hanital Eino Mimait. That's a mouthful, but let me just explain to you what he meant, or what he means. There is another halacha where bittul comes into play, and that is if I have two courtyards, chatzar A and chatzar B. Are these chatzar A and chatzar B, does each one need their own eruv or not? Well, if you have a wall that separates them, so it needs two eruvim, no? But let's say the wall is made out of something which I might remove. Right? It's the same as our sugya. Is there bittul or there's no bittul? But it could also go the other way, that instead of a wall between them, you have like a valley between them, and you put stuff in to fill in that valley. So the Gemara in Erevin writes that if you have a dover she'eno nitol b'shabbos, actually Tysus refers to this on the top Tysus, let's say for some reason you put a wallet between the, I don't know how large this wallet is, halavai I should have that amount of money, but you put a wallet between the two chatzeros, so that is for sure bittul, the Gemara says, because since we're talking about an Erev, which is relevant for Hilchos Shabbos, and on Shabbos I'm not allowed to move my wallet, so that for sure is bittul. That's a davar she'eino nitol b'Shabbos. Says the Rosh, what I see from that Gemara is that you do not need permanent bittul. The fact that I distinguish between an item which is muktza and an item that's not muktza, muktza is not a relevant concept on Wednesday. Muktza is only a relevant concept on Shabbos. Were the issue to be like the Rabbeinu Chananel and like the Rav Yoh say, that you need bittul o'olam, and like the Ritva says, you need bittul o'olam, so then, l'cha'ora, it wouldn't matter if you can't move it. The fact that the Gemara makes a significant point about not being able to move it, that indicates that what? That indicates that you only need bittul for the meshech zman ha-mitzvah, right? For Shabbos purposes, for the entire Shabbos, for Sukkah purposes, the entire Sukkot, for Tumah purposes, the entire time that the Tumah is there, right? We'll talk about, we're going to spend some time.
We wouldn't do that for Chametz and say it's only going to last 7 days that it's Batel, and then it's
going to be again, well, Chametz, bittul by Chametz means, well, no, that you're talking about what? If I have like chametz that I designate.
No, I'm just saying if the Arnaki thing was just because, oh, it's Muktzah Shabbos, so therefore we know that
you're not going
to
move it. Right.
Then there's a concept that something can be only batel for a short time.
So, okay, well, chametz has to really be batel forever, but then you're going to take it back.
So that's a special din.
Right. Then you take it back after. Yeah, yeah.
Also, it depends on, I was thinking like when we are doing beer chametz and we're reading the batel, everything that we don't know about, I mean, that we are explicitly saying we want it to be Afra, like we explicitly say that we're doing it forever.
Well, yeah, kind of. Actually, I want to talk about the Afra the Ara line and go in a slightly different direction than you're saying, and I want to talk about it right now. Let's go slowly. There is two schools of thought among the Rishonim. Rashi says bittul has to be only for the zman of the yontif, but it has to be verbalized. On the other extreme, you have those who say it has to be permanent, but you don't have to verbalize it. Presumably, they are coming from two different halachic perspectives. We could understand the bittul in the sugya as being a halacha of raising a floor. Or I could understand that bittul is not a halacha of raising the floor, but it's a halacha within sukkah of creating the proper dimension for the sukkah. Now, before you think that I'm crazy, let me explain what I think I mean. If I have a floor, and I want to raise the floor, so if I just put a box on the floor, that's not raising the floor. Because anyone could come and take that box away. The floor isn't raised. But if I put dirt there, so I'm really, again, especially if you have a dirt floor, you're mamish raising the floor. A mattress, I understand, is not raising the floor. Rashi l'cha'ora is saying that as a matter of halacha, what I'm doing over here is I'm not raising the floor. I'm not creating a new floor level. Rather, what I'm doing is a halacha within sukkah. I want to make this sukkah less than 20 amos tall. Now, in order to make the sukkah less than 20 amos tall, if it's a halacha in sukkah, so then all I care about is the zman of the sukkah of 7 days. But if it's halacha in sukkah also, I better make sure that everyone knows, or that I know at least, or that it's very clear that this is not a sukkah over 20 amos anymore. So I have to articulate it, that I am declaring that this is no longer a sukkah over 20 amos. The Ritva, the Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ravya, the other school of Rishonim, probably are saying that, you know what, you're actually not doing a halacha in sukkah. You're making a new floor. Now, if I make a new floor, it has to be permanent. People don't build a new floor just for a short amount of time, no? You're not going to spend the money on the construction team to build a new floor for, right? It's construction. You're building a new floor. It's got to be permanent. And also, because you're building a new floor, there's no halachic significance. It's not mashuil chati that I'm making a new floor. It's mitzias, right? When my construction guy comes in and he builds a floor, right, he doesn't have to, you know, start shuckling and davening and say, hini muchanim zoom, and I'm making a floor. It's a floor! Right? So you don't need to articulate anything. A floor is a floor. That's the way, right? So the issue over here, the machlokes between Rashi and the rest of Judaism, we'll say, is about, am I raising a floor, or am I doing mashahu hilchati linyan sukkah? Good? Now, if we are correct about this, so a few things emerge. For Rashi, is 7 days an absolute requirement?
As in, as a minimum.
As a minimum. So maybe. I'm not sure. Let's say, for example, I have a sukkah over 20 amos tall, but I don't use it until third day Chol HaMoed. Third day Chol HaMoed, I want to come, and I want to make the sukkah under 20 amos. How long do I have to make my hinani mucha nemezuman that I'm leaving the stuff there? Right? According to Rashi, it's not really 7 days. It means for the yontiv. If I only have 3 days left for the yontiv, gevaldik. Ms. Blau.
Are you able to... Are you... If you have a sukkah, you're not allowed to fix your sukkah on Chol HaMoed. So why am I...
Again, so whether I'm allowed to fix a sukkah on Chol HaMoed, it relates to general issues of malach on Chol HaMoed. Malacha letzerech hamayit is mutter if it's not done ma'isa uman, if it's done ma'isa hedyet. You're allowed to build a sukkah on Chol HaMoed.
Totally, I mean, you can build your sukkah from scratch on Chol HaMoed.
If you're not hiring a professional builder, if you're like a regular Jewish man or Jewish woman who's not a professional builder, yeah, in other words, you're allowed to build a sukkah on Chol HaMoed. I remember as a kid, Hurricane Gloria. This was probably before most of you were born. But Hurricane Gloria, I think in 1983, came to the New York area right before Sukkot. And a lot of people everyone took their sukkah down, like, but right before Sukkot, because there's a concern that, like, the hurricane winds would, like, send all the bamboo, like, shooting everywhere. And some people didn't put their sukkah up, like, because they went who knows where for the first days. Then a lot of people built their sukkah on Chol HaMoed. Think?
Yeah. In college, we'd always put the slop on our sukkah because it was kept on like the 8th floor terrace, and it was like a concern that
it's gonna
fly off the roof and kill people. So yeah.
Again, these things are fairly legitimate concerns.
That's the reason that we used to put it to the slop on just for Chol HaMoed in last days.
Oh my god, Dwight.
Again?
One of the professors at Cooper had told us that we were lucky that nobody died the time that the sukkah blew off the roof. Because if it did, we'd never be allowed to build the sukkah up there ever again. So,
I mean, that's the only reason why you're lucky that no one died.
Yes.
It's only because
of
the sukkah.
You have a few other fringe benefits, but...
Okay, sorry. But here's the other thing about this sukkah. I have a sukkah that's fundamentally over 20 amos. Why is a sukkah over 20 amos no good? Let's chazer. Three reasons.
You won't know that you're in a sukkah.
You have to know that you're in a sukkah. That's Rabbah.
Shade,
that's Reb Zeira.
And Arai
versus Keva, that's Rava. Okay. This sukkah is over 20 amos. And then what I'm doing is I'm taking some straw and I'm putting in the sukkah. This sukkah l'cha ora remains a sukkah that is a permanent structure, no? It remains keva. Mm-hmm. How can it be kosher?
And we have to be working within Rava's world.
So within Rava's world, it's very difficult that this sukkah should be kosher. Maybe this Gemara is a raya against Rava, but the majority of Rishonim paskin like Rava. It's a problem. Another problem. There's a halach of ta'aseh v'lo min ha'asui, which means that I have to build a kosher sukkah. Let's say the schach is attached to the tree and I just cut it off, right? It's down on my sukkah and I just cut it off. That's puzzle, right? You have to move the schach around. You have to put up kosher schach. Over here, I have a puzzle sukkah, no? It's over 20. I put some straw in. How does that make the sukkah kosher?
Maybe it's mevatel, the part of the
dafanos
that are next.
So now we're talking. If the Ritva, the Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ravya are correct, and our understanding of them is correct, I think we answered both kashas. Because what I just did is I just raised the floor, which is the halachic equivalent of building a new wall. And if that's the case, it's a halachic equivalent of building a new wall. So what I also did is it's no longer a diras keva. Right? Diras keva is that the wall, right, is permanent. But yeah, there used to be a permanent wall, but now it's a different wall. If there's a different floor, it's a different wall. No? According to the approach of Bittul in the halachic sense, these questions are much harder to understand. That's all I'll say. Next. The Ritva is slightly different, though, if you read the Ritva slowly and carefully, than the way we presented it. You see, we presented an approach that bitzol fundamentally means that you're making it part of the floor. And therefore it has to be permanent. The Ritva says that kind of, sort of, but the Ritva doesn't say it exactly. Let me explain. The Rosh brings a proof to Rashi that bitzol only has to be for this man of the Yontiv, because since the Gemara in Erevin speaks about a wallet as being batal, because a wallet can't be moved. So you see, the halacha bittul is only for that time frame, it's not permanent. The Ritva addresses that question, and the Ritva writes, again, I didn't check to see which Ritvas you sent around or didn't send around, but the Ritva writes, that if something is halachically unable to be moved, so then it is a better form of bittul, And therefore, even though it is not permanent, it is still a bittul. Meaning, the Ritva really says that the issue in our Gemara is, I don't believe you. You say you're not going to move it. I don't believe you. Maybe you will. But you say you're not going to move a wallet on Shabbos. Of course I believe you. Why, you're such a bum. You're going to be metal to mukts on Shabbos. Say, well, you're an Orthodox Jew. No one moves mukts on Shabbos. Notice for the Ritva, the issue is not as much. Does it become a chilak of the ground or not? The Ritva's view over here is slightly more nuanced. The Ritva's view is... the Ritva's view, I'm just looking for such a line in the Ritva where he says it beferish. The Ritva's view is that, you know what? The concern is, are you going to move it? If it's a din of mukta that we know you're not going to move, like a wallet, etc., so that's a davar pashut. Yeah, this is the Ritva. It's on page Chav Zayin Chav Ches over here. Bahada Amrinam B'Shmaitzin. Here. Let me read it to you, then I'll just send it out. Bahada Amrinam B'Shmaitzin L'Gabi Tuma Yini Bitul La'olam. Don't ask a question from a Gemara in Baba Basra that maybe I'll talk about in a minute, because Kevan Sha'asur L'Tautilo E Efsharo L'Malech Litlo. So therefore, even Bitul L'Yomo is Bitul. Right? If you want to see it, it's like this little bit of the Ritva. Right? Even bitul yomo is a bitul because since it's not shayach to move it. Right? What the Ritva is saying is that it's not so much an issue, does it become a chelak of the ground or not a chelak of the ground? The issue is more, are you worried that the person will go and move it? If there's a halachic impediment to moving it, so you're not going to move it. Grand. Now the Ritva actually brings this idea from an unfortunate case of bittul or tumah. Let's just talk about tumah for a minute. We have enough time to do this. Okay. So, tumah in our Gemara, and tumah, there's a Gemara in Baba Basra, like a Nafchaf Aleph. There are two different sugyas of tumah. Let me explain. One sugya of bittul by tumah is as follows. Let's say there's a dead body in one room. Is the Kohen allowed to be in another room? So technically speaking, if all the doors are shut, so it's like a separate area, so there's no problem. Let's say you have an opening, and you just stuff up the opening. Right, that's a sugya in Baba Basra about rakik, whether it's mema'id b'chalon. If I take like some dough and I stick it there, does that minimize, there's a shir peseach tefach, a certain amount that the tumah can go through. If I just put some dough there, is that memay b'chalon? That's a sugya. The Gemara in Baba Basra writes, and this is the part that you're not going to like, but I'll say it anyway, that let's say you take a baby, a baby who's born after 8 months of gestation. In halacha, babies, again, this does not conform with the universe the way we know it, but in halacha there are two types of full-term babies. There are 7-month full-term babies and there are 9-month full-term babies. But an 8-month baby is assumed to be dead from the moment it comes out. So therefore, if you have an 8-month baby and the 8-month baby is going to be muksa, you can't move it on Shabbos. The mother is allowed to nurse the baby only to relieve the mother's pressure in her breasts. She can't nurse the baby to keep the baby alive. Okay, you really don't like this. Okay, I could go more. Right?
That's awful.
Yes. Oh, yes, but that's the halacha. Okay. I'm being a little bit cavalier over here. But, so, the Gemara says that the baby, that 8-month baby, is for sure memayit b'chalon, because unlike the rakik, that you might move, you might decide that you're hungry and you want to eat the dough, the baby is muktzah, no one's going to move it. That's the discussion in that Ritva. So that's one sugya of bittul. That's the sugya of bittul going this way. The sugya that our Gemara invokes about bittul is actually a little different. You have a grave. You have a coffin. You have a coffin. So there are dead bodies in the coffin. Uh-huh. Everyone agree so far? Now, there's a halacha that if I have an ohel that is pasuach tefach, if you have one tefach, and it's meduyak in Rashi over here, and let's read the Rashi inside. Hachi garsinan. Bayashimal uhu tevin otzerorosu bitlo. Okay? Let's read the Rashi. Le'inyin ahalos tnan. This is in Maseches Ahalos. Tuma sheyesh la ohel chalal tefach eina bolka'as lamala min hagag. If you have tuma that has a tefach of space, right? So then the tuma does not go above the roof. So if I have a corpse inside a coffin, and there is a tefach of space between the corpse and the coffin, so all the tuma is contained in that coffin. However, aval tuma ritzutza, if you have squashed tuma, she'en la chalal tefach himena legag shekenegda, that you don't have a tefach himena, meaning from the corpse to the roof, right? So then it goes ad l'rakia tamei, debokas va'ola. If you have squashed tuma, if you do not have a tefach between the corpse and the top of the coffin, it's squashed tuma. That's called tuma v'tzutza. It's a halacha l'moshe misinai, that the tuma is ola ad l'rakia, the tuma goes all the way up to the heavens. That's the din. If you have a tefach, it's contained. But if you have less than a tefach, so tuma ritzutza, halacha l'moshe misinai says it goes bokeya va'ola ad l'rakia, it goes all the way up to the heaven. Then the question over here is, if I have a house, and there's a corpse in the house, and I fill it up with tevin otsroros, does it become tuma ritzutza, that the tuma is going to get squashed and go all the way up? It depends if it's a bittul or not. That's why it's relevant for our sugya.
So you're filling up everything.
You have a corpse in the house.
Yeah.
And what you do is you put lots of pebbles and dirt on top of the corpse. Right? So if it's bittul, if you're leaving it there for good, then it becomes tuma ritzutza. And then the tuma of the corpse goes all the way up above the roof, and everywhere above, below, everywhere is going to be tamei. But if it is not batal, so then it is considered like you have a halal tefach, like you have a tefach of space, and once you have a tefach of space, so then the tuma is contained inside that house.
Sorry, I don't understand why it's...
Dead guy.
Yeah.
Right?
But if it's not mevatel...
If I'm not mevatel it, so that means it's not here permanently. That means that I ignore the presence of these pebbles.
Because it's not there permanently, ke'ilu, it's not there now.
Nachon. So I ignore the presence of these pebbles, and therefore it becomes, or it remains, a tuma with poseach tefach, or chalal tefach, whatever it is, that the tumah is contained. Now, the sugya basically is dealing with that issue. That's exactly the issue that we're talking about the tevin ubitlay, etc. So it's relevant for tumah, whether it's considered tumah ritzutza. Now, this actually was a big issue a few years ago, no? People remember that there was... You could actually find these, like, really silly pictures of Kohanim sitting on airplanes in plastic bags.
Yes.
Right? So that's an issue because many airlines will fly Niftarim to Eretz Yisrael, let's say, to bury them there. Okay. So you're in the same area with the mace. So if you're a Kohen, that could be an issue. What happens that today... there's a big tzaddik, he passed away, but his son does. There's a guy, Pinchas Mandel, who was like the expert in packaging mesim to send him to Eretz Yisrael. Basically, he would build like a big plastic container, and they'd put the coffin in the plastic container, and therefore the tumah of the nifter would stay in the plastic container, wouldn't go into the plastic, is not makabel tumah, and therefore the tumah wouldn't get into the place where the passengers are sitting, and all is grand. That's why it's probably better to fly El Al if you're a Kohen than other carriers, because other carriers might not package the mesim properly. Fine, so that was one issue. But then they found out that all the flights that took off from Eretz Yisrael, from Ben-Gurion, or I don't know all the flights, but many of them would fly over a cemetery in Chulon. And the cemetery in Chulon, it's obviously it's a Jewish cemetery. And does this raise an issue of Tumas Kohanim? It's a real problem. Then they found out, by the way, they solved the problem in Israel. They solved it. What?
There are no coffins in Israel.
In Israel, we'll talk about that in a second. Right? I'll talk about that in a minute. It's a bigger problem, actually. You see, in Israel, they solved the problem because they changed the flight patterns, that they don't fly over cemeteries. Usually, I grew up in the Five Towns, so I became immune to airplanes, like, flying over my head, because, like, this is life. But most normal people wake up in the middle of the night when an airplane flies over their head. So most normal places on the planet would rather the airplane flies over the cemetery because presumably the people in the cemetery are not waking up in the middle of the night from the noise. That's the way it tends to work. In Israel, they change the flight pattern so it doesn't fly over the cemetery. It happens that right near Kennedy Airport, there's a cemetery in Queens that many of the flights actually fly right over that cemetery, no? The Baychester or something, there's a cemetery right there. So you didn't solve that problem. Now, Tanya's making a point, though, that the way we bury bodies in America is different than the way they bury bodies in Israel. In Israel, basically, you just have a bier. B-I-E-R, that you put the nifter on the bier, you cover with a talis, or cover a woman with, like, shrouds, basically, and they put them in the ground directly, then they cover it up. So, in Israel, one would argue that flying over the cemetery is more of a concern than in America. Because in America, if you bury a nifter in a coffin, so you're going to have chalal tefach. No? There is... most of you have probably never been around packaging bodies in coffins and stuff. But there is a tefach of space. You have at least 3 inches between the top of the nifter's nose and the coffin. So that would mean that the tumah is contained inside the coffin. So in America, presumably, it's less of an issue than in Israel, where it becomes mamash tumah ritzutza, you would think. But it's not actually tumah ritzutza in Israel either. When they had this conversation, probably 15, 20 years ago, so in the Torah journal Yeshurun, no, in Tchumen, excuse me, in Tchumen, it's like the, it's Machon Tzometz, Torah journal. So I think Rav Weitman, who's the Rav of Tanuva, I think, actually wrote this article. So he said, well, you know, even in Israel, it's not a problem, because the way they bury mesim is you put the body down on the bottom of the grave, and then they put, like, concrete blocks on top, and then you fill in the dirt on top of the concrete blocks. You're not shoveling dirt directly on the body. What they are doing. So there are different places. There are different. Yes.
How does that
thing
even work?
Huh?
How's it halachic?
So concrete is considered kavura bekarka. It comes from the ground. Even metal, most poskim assume. It's like Orthodox Jews like only use pine boxes, right? So you really should not use a box that has velvet in it. But metal, most assume, is that it comes from the karka as well. So it could be that it's considered kavura b'karka and metal as well. That's a whole discussion about whether there's a shinui. Concrete comes from the karka. So basically, this fellow was arguing that in places where they use the blocks, maybe you have a tefach between the nifter and the top, and therefore the tumah is contained. And if you use a coffin, certainly the tumah is contained. So first of all, not everywhere do they use blocks. Second of all, even if you use blocks, over time, those blocks cave in. And then you have tumah ratzutza. No? And, by the way, even when you use coffins, actually, this past week, I was doing a kavura for someone, and what happens is sometimes it's like, it's hard to fill in the grave. There's like a ton of dirt. It really takes a lot of time. So there was like a gigantic rock over there. So this big guy, like a 6'4", like, you know, he picks up this rock and he throws it. And it cracked the wooden coffin top. Now, she didn't feel anything. It's okay.
But
I don't think they noticed. I was like, whatever. But let's be honest. The wooden coffin tops also cave in over time. Right? They're exposed to the elements. They'll break. So even if you have a halal tefach at the beginning, it's going to become tumah ratzutza over time. The Gemara in Brachos on Daf Yud Tes speaks about how medalgin hayinu al gabe aronos, that we used to like, you were discussing this?
Yeah.
That we used to like jump on top of the coffin. It's like a game, you know, coffin jumping. It's like cow tipping. It's like a lot of fun, right? And so medalgin hayinu al gabe aronos, we used to like jump on top. What's the heter? The teretz is that, no, it's a halal tefach and it's contained tumah. But that might help at the beginning. Over time, it becomes tumah ratzutza. So now we have a problem. What about flying over the cemeteries? Is there a heter? So in Israel, it's not a problem anymore. But in New York, is there any heter for the Kohanim to fly over cemeteries? So there was a whole discussion. Reb Fivel Cohen sent the shaila to Rabbi Yashiv. Reb Fivel Cohen had three svaras to be makel. One svara to be makel is that many Rishonim hold that the din of ohel zarek lo shmei ohel, right? The Gemara in Gittin says that an ohel is only when it's stationary, but an ohel zarek, when it's a moving thing, it's lo shmei ohel. Some of the Rishonim say ohel zarek lo shmei ohel means that ohel zarek for this stuff that's inside it is an ohel. It's just not an ohel for the stuff on top of it. So if I'm inside the airplane, I am an ohel. Another svari he had to be makel was that maybe kohanim are tamei anyway, and according to one approach within the Ravid, there's no iser of becoming further tamei once you're tamei. And the third svari he had is that maybe kohanim aren't kohanim.
So he said,
So Reb Fivel Cohen is a Kohen.
Didn't he say that it's fine to be metame from non-Jewish meitim?
So non-Jewish meisim is a machleike. Kivrei Akum, whether metame or in a metame, is a machleike satanoyim. In Yeridei Ashin Samach Tes, we pass on that you should be careful not to be metame to Kivrei Akum also, yeah.
But it's still not such a big issue.
It's not as big of an issue. It happens at the cemetery in Queens, it's a Jewish cemetery. So what are we going to do? So Reb Fivel Cohen had these three svaras to be makel. Reb Yashiv takes them. He says, number one, Ayel Zarok. Right, we don't pass in. We pass in Lo Shmei Ohel, even for the people inside. Number two, that the Kohanim are Tamei anyway. Yeah, but that was a whole discussion with Chassam Sefer and the Noid Behuda and the Patriarch Shinai and Beis in Yerideya. And we pass in over there that even the Ravid, who says that once you're tummy, there's not a problem becoming tummy again. That just means you don't get malchus of becoming tummy again. But there's an iser da'iraisa to become tummy again. Right? It could be it's an iser shein bo malchus. And then the third svara, that our kohanim are not even kohanim. So Rebbe Yashiv like totally didn't take that one seriously at all. And he doesn't even respond to it. Like he mamish, like he totally ignored that svara. So is there any heter for Kohanim flying over? So there might be a heter as follows. There is a din that Safek Tuma in Rishus HaRabim is Sveikol Tahar. Safek Tuma in Rishus HaYochid is Sveikol Tame. The definition of Rishus HaRabim is whenever you have three people. If you're on a plane with three people, okay, that's not so uncommon. So it could be it's a Safek Tuma. Safek Tuma because not every flight is going to go over the cemetery. Even if it goes over the cemetery, it might not go over the part of the cemetery where there are mesim. There are parts of cemeteries that are empty. And maybe we could add to the Safek that maybe there still is Chalal Tefach. Right?
Yeah.
And you put this all together, maybe you could have a kula that way. Maybe. Very difficult. Rav Shachter happens to have a piece in his Sefer in Be'ikvei Hatzon. Rav Shachter has an argument that maybe the din of Tuma, that we say Tuma Ritzutzah is Oila Ad L'Rakia. So Rav Shachter says it's Ad V'lo Ad B'chlal. That there is an area that is considered beyond the Rakia. It sounds like a really bad novel. Beyond the Rakia. So beyond the Rakia, he tries to argue that anything above the first layer of clouds is beyond the Rakia. In other words, this question of flying over cemeteries has been a very old question. Rav Mordechai Gifter, who was a student here in our yeshiva, Rav Gifter sent this shayla to everybody. For some reason, he was like nervous about this question, like flying. He wasn't a kohen, but he was like nervous about flying over cemeteries. And there's huge literature about flying over cemeteries from like 150 years ago, 75 years ago. It just came up again like 15 years ago. It's like all these issues, like the Uggs, what they're shot. So like resurfaces every, 25 years. Like the same issue resurfaces. Like the Indian hair shaitlach. Every 30 years, like someone like wakes up and like says, oh, that's a problem. So this issue has been around for a long time. Rav Shachter has his approach that once you're above the cloud level, so therefore there's no tumah at all. But that won't help for the cemetery in Bayside. It's Bayside, Queens. It won't help for that cemetery because it's mamish right when you take off.
You're not high enough for that.
You're not high enough. You're not at cloud level yet. So that's a real, it's not a simple issue. I think the only heter over there is the Safek Tuma Birshus HaRabim. Or if you hold it, there's no heter, you got to wear your plastic bag.
Whose heter was the
Safek Tuma Birshus HaRabim? I don't remember. In the Tchumen journal. I'm like obsessed with this topic for some reason. I have like dozens of articles on it. If you want, I could look up who says what when. I don't remember. I didn't like prepare for this right now. But that's the basic story. So this issue of poseach tefach is actually a very, very relevant issue. Halacha l'maisa, mamesh, it comes up. It would be a serious tikkun if someone could build a coffin with like a stronger type of wood that would not deteriorate over time, or to treat the wood with like, I think they don't, we use a plain pine box and we don't treat it. That you could treat, like my patio, I could treat in the way that it becomes weatherproof. If I had weatherproof my coffin, it would potentially solve a good chunk of this issue, at least for 100, 150 years, or whatever it is. So that might be a tikkun in terms of, again, it won't solve their bodies who have been buried for a very long time. Okay, this is quite a lugubrious topic, but what can we do? Okay.
Right.
Anything else, Trevor? To discuss death? Okay. My kids make fun of me because I don't know why, but I end up talking about like Levayas and death an awful lot. It's like a remnant of my rabbinate. I talk about Erevin and death. Those are like the things. But what can we do? Okay.